Good morning. Welcome to episode 57 of the Driller Newscast, a weekly update on the news and stories impacting the drilling and water industry. It's going to be a great episode. I have Dave Schulenberg, Executive Director for the NGWA Partner States. Dave was there in 2018 when the 3M lawsuit started in Minnesota over PFAS, with his town where he lives being impacted. He's got some great insight. And this all leads into my feature, which is a recap with Jeff Williams on the fly-in, having our voice heard, where a core piece of that was talking about the representation of private water wells and the effects of PFAS, not to mention the rest of the regulations going on. And why do we keep talking about this? Because our voice needs to be heard. We need to be thinking about these things, and we all need to be in DC together. We all need to go to our state capitals and advocate. We need to educate anybody that has a discussion about water, groundwater. We should be the professional representing them. For this week's safety, it's preparation time leading into the last week of April. April 28th will be Workers' Memorial Day. This is a day established by OSHA for all of those who have fallen while at work, never got to come home. We understand how to identify unsafe acts, unsafe conditions, what proper practices there are for PPE. I want you to think about the 39 men that died last year in trenching accidents. I want you to think about the struck bys and the caught in between and the confined spaces. The extreme weather that's impacting us by heat exhaustion, the lightning strikes. There's plenty of situations that are avoidable. And next week, we're going to spend some time and talk about incidences in our industry and how we could have done a better job. I want you to think right now of the behavioral psychology of unsafe conditions, unsafe acts. And at any given time, the study has proven one third of our workforce feels uncomfortable with what they're doing. And we have rotating equipment and stored energy and suspended loads. So we'll cover that next week so we can jump into this discussion with Dave and then wrap up with Jeff Williams. I hope you enjoy. For the news, we're going to sit down with Dave Schulenberg, Executive Director of the Partner States, and talk about 3M in Minnesota and his hometown being right there in the middle of this PFAS situation and the lawsuit that started in 2018 and how it settled out. There's $9 billion over the next 5 years from the federal infrastructure law to look at this, not to mention the lawsuit money and all of the issues. But why are we taking time again to talk more PFAS? Is 4 parts per trillion is a very, very important number to what it's going to be for water quality and quality of life. And you can see this from impacts on kidneys and liver and thyroid and the myriad of other situations that have come along on those soft tissues and what PFAS has affected. Yes, they say that 99% of our world's population has PFAS in our bloodstream due to Teflon and waterproofing and all the other aspects of products. But we need to be in the know. And we're going to jump right into this. Thank you, Dave.
Thanks for having me, Brock. I'm glad to be here and talk a little bit more about PFAS and share what happened in my community. The state of Minnesota sued 3M, I believe it was back in 2018, but again, I might have that wrong, to the tune of $870 million. This was to be used in one specific area of Minnesota, South Washington County. So from the St. Croix on the east to the Mississippi on the west and 94 south. It covers about 10 communities and a couple of townships and a part of an Indian reservation. But that is where this money is to be used. So the two leading agencies that are going to administer this are the Pollution Control Agency and the Department of Natural Resources. They put together a couple of different work groups, one being 3M and government agencies. So you've got the city leaders involved. And then they did another one about community members and community business. And that is the one that I really wanted to be on, partly because of what I do for my job. I'm the executive director for the Minnesota Water Well Association. There are a number of private water system users here in the South Metro area, in South Washington County, but also because of my larger role being the director of partner states for NGWA, I manage six other state water well drilling associations, one of which being Michigan, where you're at, Brock, and really where this PFAS conversation for me started with Wolverine and everything. So getting back to this, they started to put together these work groups and they met for 4 hours once a month, and it totaled for about 4 years. And it was everything from, at the beginning, all feel good introductions, this is what it is, drama, 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 to working towards the end to saying, how is it that we're going to put together a water policy with the $740 million that were left after lawyer fees, et cetera, to address one part of the settlement. There's one part that talks about providing safe drinking water. The other one talks about, the second part, I believe, talks about how to address natural resources within this affected area. How to rebuild the fish, the boat launches, the yada, 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 everything else that was affected by it. And through the course of this conversation, it became aware to me that a lot of it was going to be directed towards not so much focusing on stopping the contamination, you know, flow, but it was really on providing groundwater, providing water to the citizens. How are we going to do that? What is going to be the task? And so every meeting we would talk about these things. And by being involved in the industry that I am, I was able to bring to light the need to share that there is treatment available to the private well owner that needs to be done, because it doesn't make financial sense to put long pipe 5 miles out to tie in 4 or 5 people. These work groups, these agencies, these other things that would come up, I mean, we really did explore everything, putting in or tying to the local regional and piping things down, putting in booster pumps into the Mississippi and the St. Croix, and then piping it in and treating it, to small community areas. And through the course of this, they came up with some documentation that allowed for large filtration systems on municipal wells, taking some people off of their private systems and tying them in where applicable to the local municipal lines, but also making sure that the private well owners had money available to them for POET systems, the point of entry treatment. And what that does is it allows these individuals to stay on their private water, to have their private water treated, and to put that treated water right back into the watershed. There is a groundwater divide that goes down kind of lengthwise in one part of the county here, that depending on where you live, your watershed either goes to the Mississippi or to the St. Croix. And so by having my involvement, I was able to get other leaders in my area that are in the association and in the industry to participate in some of these. And they brought that hands-on professional knowledge to conversations. They were able to say, look, I drilled all the wells in this area. I know what I'm talking about. You can't put a pipe from A to B because in between A and B, there's very shallow earth and you're going to be hitting bedrock. Well, they didn't know that until my groundwater professional was able to chime in and explain this. Because of his knowledge firsthand of being in this area. So through all of this, I was able to put together a presentation that I've used in a few states that really talks about what the individuals in our profession need to know. What is it that our contractors need to know about PFAS? And how is it that they can then explain this to their homeowner? The agencies will come in and they'll talk and they'll use per and polyfluoroalkali substances, and you have 8 parts per trillion. And Jill homeowner is going, oh my God, what does that mean? When in reality, they're just understanding they have PFAS and what am I going to do? Is it dangerous? Yada, yada, yada. The local landowners, local homeowners that are on private wells, 90% of the time have a greater trust for groundwater professionals than they do of government agencies, of state agencies, of city agencies, or people like that coming on their property and talking to them about their water. So it's up to us, leaders within the groundwater profession, to continue to try and educate groundwater professionals on what it is that they're dealing with, and then provide them some tools either to talk about treatment, to provide information on where these individuals can get treatment, and really have this knowledge as another tool within their toolbox, right next to their pipe dope, their wrenches, their screwdrivers, their hammers, etc.
That PFAS-free pipe dope.
That is, it's the PFAS-free pipe dope and Teflon tape. That's right.
You know, and
part of what we talk about too is, you know, there was best practices years ago. Teflon had PFAS in it. Now you're finding that there are alternatives to that need to be addressed and need to be used. It's called a forever chemical for a reason. This isn't going away anytime soon.
I think it's important that one, we have many man-made chemicals out there that are forever chemicals.
Yes.
That, there's a great movie came out in 2019 called Dark Waters, starring Mark Ruffalo. And it's the story based on Robert Ballott in Cincinnati, going back to one of his family's hometowns in West Virginia, that gives a good breakdown of, C8 into PFAS, and, major corporations from Dow to DuPont to 3M, all having different chemicals. And a big thing that came from our discussion at the fly-in is we're in treatment. David, right up there in the front of the room, said, we haven't even gotten to a remediation plan yet.
Yeah.
And at 4 or 8 parts per trillion, what does the life cycle of that look like? So for our homeowners, me getting to work in groundwater wells and then also working in municipal water, we have an aged infrastructure. We have many of our community, our water bill is what our water bill is, you look at what it's going to cost to increase protection, monitoring, all of that, we're going to increase water bill. Building more pipeline increases
I want to share two things with you. This morning on the news, they were talking about a sinkhole that opened up in north part of Minneapolis from a water main break. And they interviewed the guy and they said, yeah, a lot of our water and sewer lines in this area are pretty old. We figure this one was a clay one from 1903 that gave way. So there's your aging infrastructure. When my president at the time, Dave Henrich, and I were working with these two work groups, we did a presentation to them, not about so much the Water Well Association, but about groundwater, what it is that it is and how many people use it. There's a lot of questions from the citizen and business work group, trying to understand it. And there was one comment from the 3M and government that was basically, I'll narrow this down to say, their comment was nice commercial. So what we got out of that was they're seeing $740 million. The city of X has their expansion plans out to 2030, 40, 50. How was it that they can use that money to plan for that as they know their city is going to expand? Well, we want money to use for this, to put this out, to treat that, yada, yada, yada. It becomes difficult to understand what water is worth until it's gone.
Best practices following the right regulations of a good, strong water well, that is then, we just have to understand, has to be tested and monitored. Yeah. We need to be telling our customers this. There is a stigma that a water well is not safe, and that's not the case.
There's a stigma that the agency, the state, tests the water in the community I live in, and it's treated, and it makes this, and it hits this, and yada, yada, yada. And the private well outside of town, since we can't test it as state agency, there's something wrong with it. Where the homeowner is saying, I get it. It's my problem. It's my issue. It's my well. And it's my responsibility to have it tested. As an association, it's our responsibility to provide the information to our members to say, add this to your repertoire.
And we need to continue that. There's 23 million private water wells, but I keep shouting this statistic. There's 150,000 municipalities in the United States. 15,000 of them feed 90% of our population.
Yeah.
Those municipalities that are less than 3,300 people, we really need to know from our city council and our water infrastructure and what's happening, how they're actually being, recorded, staffing. There's a myriad of things opposed to looking in my backyard and understanding that I had a properly constructed water well that is isolated, that I'm treating properly. Those are the educations we need to be having, everybody. Yep. That's it.
I agree. And I think you and I could probably do a whole other segment on what we've just been talking about and how we could go about doing that.
The big piece that needs to be hit home today is be in the know.
Be in the know. That's exactly right. Be part of the association. One of the slides that I have on that presentation is a guy kind of shrugging his shoulders, like, why should I care about this? Two reasons. One, it's in your backyard. I'm a mile and a half from the 3M plant. My well is less than two blocks away from me for my city, and it was the one that had GAC filters put in on it. I grew up in Flint, Michigan. This isn't talking about lead or anything like that. But as a kid, you're out there chasing frogs and toads and, you know, things like that in the local creek, PFAS contamination in that creek. Why should I care? Because I grew up in it. I live in it. Dave, PFAS isn't even in my state. We're not talking about it. Guess what? They're going to find it. They're going to talk about it. And then you should care. You can't do this head in the sand thing anymore with PFAS. You just can't.
For this week's featured industry professional, we met up at the NGWA Smart Groundwater Policies Fly-In, Smart Water Policies Fly-In. And we had a great interview in front of the Capitol. And with the wind and the fire trucks and the chanting, it's DC and there's lots of things going on. And our guest, you know, at this point, might as well be a co-host to the newscast. We have our legendary good friend and industry knowledge sharer, Jeff Williams. Good morning, Jeff.
Good morning, Brock. Thanks for having me on.
Jeff has been a veteran of the NGWA fly-in. How many years have you gone, Jeff?
I've been going since 2007-ish. So I was on the government affairs committee there for some time. And saw high value in going to the fly-in. So it's been since then. I don't have quite as many as my friend Scott Fowler. This last fly-in's the first one he's missed since it started. So, but I'm pulling a close second, I think.
So you are a very busy man. I see you on the back of the rig on some complex geothermal holes. I see you giving talks on, you know, having the right business mindset and talking on CDL and advocating, and you're on different groups. How do you find the time to come to the fly-in and why?
I think you have to make time for things that are important. And the more organized your life is, the more you can do, right? But you have to set your priorities, and then you have to set a plan to get there. And I think the strategy of delegating things that you can delegate to others, and then deciding what is a priority to you, and the fly-in is a priority to me.
What do you get out of coming to the Capitol, other than that just really great feeling of being on Capitol and knowing that, you know, you get to meet with people one-on-one? But what is your goal?
To get the staff of, really, the staff of the constituent, right? To get them to realize that we're the experts and we're a resource and we can be trusted, and to let them know what our priorities are. So if somebody reaches out to me from, let's say, Peter Welch's office or Bernie's office, or, you know, when they reach out to me, they know I'm here. They know I'm a resource, and they know that I'm willing to answer the questions that they may have and help give guidance to different policies. So I think that's really, really important.
So we had several new people this year at the fly-in. This was my second fly-in, but my first one was over 10, 12 years ago. Ryan Gross out of Iowa, sales rep and, you know, technical guru when it comes to coring highways and getting on the back of the rigs and being muddy, had an early morning meeting before we even had the kickoff professional development event. And, you know, we're having our get together that Tuesday night, and him and I are talking back and forth, and he's like, man, I'm going to go meet Senator Grassley. And I'm a little nervous, man. And out of nowhere, Jeff, you go, hey, I got your back. I'll come with you. It's talk about to folks that haven't come before that may think this is overwhelming, that we have mentors and that, you know, we're better together.
We certainly are. And anyone that goes to the fly-in will certainly always encourage that kind of cooperation. And, you know, I could see that Ryan was a little intimidated by it, the way he talked. It's like, you know, he's nervous. And I was the same way the first time I went there. I'm the Lone Ranger from Vermont. I'm the only one that ever goes to see the senators. Carol Ann, my wife, goes with me. But, you know, it can be, you don't know what to expect, right? And I knew exactly what to expect. And I said, heck, I'll get up and go with you in the morning. I'm here. Let's do this thing, right? So I got up and went with him, and it worked out really, really great. And hopefully I helped him to make him more comfortable. I mean, Ryan's a colleague. He's from the manufacturing side, but he's still a colleague and a member of this industry. And everything we do is important. So if I can help in that regard, I was more than happy to help. And it worked out great.
How did the meeting go? How was Senator Grassley? Because not often we meet with staffers, right? It's not often that we get one-on-one time with the, you know.
Well, it was Senator Ernst. He didn't meet with Senator Grassley until later. I was in there. Of course, I'm not very far out of Burlington, Vermont. And they asked me where I was from. And I said, just outside of Burlington. And they're like, oh, that's great. You know, I've been there several times. I said, oh, that's nice. That's nice. So you like the Green Mountain State? They said, no, we were talking about Burlington, Iowa. But I still got a picture with Senator Ernst. She was more than gracious. And it is not very often you actually get to spend time with the actual senator or congressperson from your state. And it was a great opportunity. And I just really enjoy that. So, yeah, she was awesome. And her priorities are great. And she and Senator Grassley are really both pretty much on the same page. They're a great friend of our industry from what I could see. So,
and Iowa uses a lot of groundwater for farming and for industry. Out of the states in the country that as urban sprawl happens, Iowa is the only state to increase farmland 5 years in a row. So, you know, we have to feed our country and we're fighting for that land.
That's where these boys came from. These are Iowa fed bucks. So.
And they look good. And obviously we can see you find time to get out there as well. So you met with Senator Sanders' people this trip. What was your top priority to talk with them?
Really top priorities for me were the PFAS, the forever chemical pieces, coming up with proper MCLs, getting the EPA to come up with those action limits. And then we got to work on capturing it and disposing of it, and then the remediation of it, whatever is possible, of any of these emerging contaminants of concern and the forever chemicals that we're going to be dealing with forever, right? And then the ground source heat pump industry, you know, I talked to them a little bit about the energy that we're putting into the interior building envelopes, and that ground source heat pumps are a tremendous technology for moving heat within a building and sustainable heating and cooling with a very low carbon impact, right? So, we talked about the CDL piece and how important it is to us to get some relief from that, because it's impossible to find CDL drivers out there that don't want to just drive a truck all day. I don't blame them. I'm not saying it's a bad thing, because if I had that opportunity to drive a $250,000 truck down the road and not have to get out and be right up to my knees in the mud, I probably would take it, right? So, I mean, we get some issues there. But those are kind of the top three that we covered in the meetings.
I don't know about driving a $250,000 truck when I can drive a $1 million drill rig.
Yeah, but you got to get out and get some mud on you, dude. You are not going to be as clean at the end of the day as you were when you started. So,
and this week is a whirlwind from us getting together to the professional development. And I felt all of the folks that came in and talked to us on World Water Day before we went to the Capitol on Thursday was a great experience. How do we, being 10,000 plus members strong, how do we get to 1 or 2% of our membership coming to DC? You know, we had a good standing and we made a lot of good meetings, but we got 50 states and we didn't have all 50 states in DC.
I don't know that our industry understands that you have to be a consistent resource. You can't just be there when we've got this huge issue we're facing. We have to be a consistent resource and be proactive, right? So we've lived a reactive society too for a long time. And the more proactive we are, the less issues we have to react to down the road, if that makes sense. That's one of the things that we have seen in the state of Vermont. Since we got proactive and involved in state government on a regular basis, on meetings with the TAC, with the Groundwater Coordinating Committee, any of those areas, if we were involved, we had less issues down the road. And I think that lobbying and going to Washington, D.C. falls in that exact same category. And I think it's really important that we're there, even when we don't have a great issue, that we're there. They know we're a resource and we have a presence, because our industry is small. We need to gather it up, and we do need to get, four, five, six times the amount of people that were there should be there every year. We ought to have 100 to 200 people there from our industry every year.
It was World Water Day. The UN was in New York City talking global water. groundwater was a topic Wednesday through Friday in two of our biggest cities and most important cities in our country that make a lot of decisions. And here we are on the Hill. And when you're a state constituent, you know, you're a voter, yeah, you get the meetings. And so our voice is heard, and it's great for us to step in. But, you know, the idea of our government is our representatives represent us. You know, our senators are our voice. Our water policies are very important to us.
They are, and I think they're going to continue to be more and more important as we go along. When you look on the news and you see the train derailments, you see all these other spills of all of these contaminants and the cleanup operations that go with them. And while some of these may not directly affect a residential water well supply, they will in time affect water supply somewhere. You can plan on it. These things don't stay in one place. These plumes continue to move and dilute. And I think that we have to be ready with treatment and disposal and remediation of these products in order to continue to have potable water that we can deliver to the homes. If we can't deliver potable water, our industry may very well just go away, right? You got to be able to deliver the right stuff. People need water to live. I think that we're more important than we give ourselves credit for in that regard.
The water world thinks that private water wells are unregulated in the Wild West. And when we see PFAS and we see emerging contaminants, sure, we're not testing until we hear something, you know, but I think it's very important for us to advocate that our major water systems have an aging infrastructure.
Yeah, and that's one of the important things that we need to keep in front of them, so that their knee-jerk reaction isn't to just go ahead and fund a pipeline in there and put a Band-Aid over the problem. We need to solve the problem, not put a Band-Aid on it. And a pipeline, a lot of the times, is just that. It's just a Band-Aid, because the problem still exists. They just covered it up. And we don't want to see that.
No, we should at some point get... Maybe it's easier to have more private water wells.
Absolutely. We've seen the cost effectiveness of it. In Vermont, we're the highest per capita private water well state in the union. We're number one. We don't have the most water wells, but we have the most per capita. So it's pretty important for us. And we're lucky because we have separated basins, right? Everything is these different valleys, small water systems. We don't have the same contiguous water systems that the West has, or even the Southeast, right down around the Tennessee-Georgia border, where they were having trouble in Chattanooga and all the way down into Atlanta. We don't share those as much as some of the Western states, but it's very important to us. If we have one of these basins that's contaminated, we have trouble getting water in there. And we've got to be, we just have to be mindful of that.
I think that's a great point. And we'll close with that. With the 4 parts per trillion number that they're looking at PFAS, the idea of what we thought a contaminated aquifer was to what, you know, the limitations. And right now, points of entry is our solution for treatment. And remediation is one of those, the best minds in the world. And we had wonderful with David and Seth sitting up there and our engineers, our PFAS experts for the NGWA sitting up there explaining to us, but we're not into a point to figure out how to clean up an aquifer. Right. Or it's quite daunting when you think about it.
Yeah, that's all in front of us, and we got a lot of work to do there. But that's what the whole, you talked about the information we gathered while we were in Washington, D.C., too. We had some great people right there that conveyed some really appropriate information to us so that we can do better out in the field. So it was a learning experience, too, if you allow it to be.
And again, when you step out of your hotel room and you look up the street and you see the Capitol, and the only other time I get that kind of goosebump feeling is when I get water coming out of the ground for a family, or, you know, it's very similar, that feeling of purpose and like supporting what I love most.
Yep, absolutely. Absolutely. It's a great time. It's a good feeling.
It is. Well, thanks, Jeff. Thanks for your time today.
All right. Thank you, Brock. It's my pleasure.
Thank you for joining us for episode 57 of the Driller Newscast. I can't thank enough the time that Dave has spent educating us over the weeks, months of the newscast. He's a very busy man handling all that is happening for 7 groundwater associations, not to mention what he does with the National Groundwater Association, which is what the partner states are. He's very involved in groundwater. He's just not another individual that is being an admin, planning an event, being overhead. His heart is in our industry, and thank you. The same with Jeff Williams. At some point, I'm just going to have to give him a co-host credit. He's like our version of Steve Martin on Saturday Night Live. It just kept popping up every episode after episode. But Jeff comes in with this great insight and sharing. And of course, we keep talking about the fly-in. Why? There's a lot of water policy going on. There's a lot going on that we need to be educated and be part of and have it in our toolbox and talking. So thank you again to both of those guys. And remember, next week, we're going to talk about Workers' Memorial Day, which is April 28th. Have a safe, productive week. Thank you.